Hello, welcome to Musical Eye Focus with me, Musical Eye's editor, Joe Sparrow. And in this episode, we're joined by Daryl Ballantyne, founder and CEO of Lyric Find, which is one of the oldest companies to license lyrics on behalf of rights holders to various digital services. Of course, lyrics are everywhere now in our streaming apps, on short form social media, and of course, in the ubiquitous lyric video. So I chat to Daryl about how lyrics are going to be used tomorrow, including in places like autonomous vehicles, and by generative AI tools. All of that in 1 minute. Now, for those of you who aren't initiated, each Music Ally Focus episode analyzes one meaningful music business story at a time, just like this, and so this podcast is also going to be pretty quick. It should take about the same amount of time as Brad Jolly could hypothetically toss a pancake 3,500 times. Brad tossed one pancake 140 times in 1 minute in 2012, and I presume by the end of it, it was looking a little bit ragged. Anyway, now, talking of flipping things around, lyrics are being used in numerous different ways and in new places, particularly in recent years. But how might lyrics be used in the future in ways we might not have thought about? And what about AI? The major AI chat platforms, for instance, can be cajoled into supplying entire song lyrics. So are these platforms licensing them? And what are the wider legal implications if I, for instance, ask an AI to create a new set of lyrics in the style of a big artist or a famous song? Let's go and talk to Daryl about all of this right now. Well, very happy to welcome Daryl Ballantyne, founder and CEO of Lyric Find, to the podcast. Hi, Daryl.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Great to see you. Now, what I'd like to talk to you about is a couple of things that sort of are connected. The role at the moment of lyrics and how they're going to be used in future technological implementations, including in cars, which is an interesting space that I haven't really thought about too much. And also, as we shift into the inescapable future of AI-powered everything, how lyrics are being used by artificial intelligence, and perhaps leaning a little bit on your deep experience in licensing lyrics and working with lyrics to understand how that might pan out a little bit. But first of all, can you give us just a little bit of basic context of who you are and what Lyric Find does?
Sure, happy to. So, I'm Daryl, as you said, the founder and CEO of Lyric Find. So we've been running this business now for 20 years, actually. This is our 20-year anniversary in 2024. And we started off primarily trying to monetize the use of lyrics online and get songwriters and publishers paid for that use. It was just kind of a wild west before of unlicensed lyric websites. But we knew that there was both a business and revenue stream there that was being generated, but also a group of people, being the writers and publishers, actually own that content that deserved to get paid. So we've spent the last 20 years building up all the rights to be able to license that, all the content to be able to make sure that everything is accurate, and have evolved from licensing lyric websites to licensing DSPs and search engines and everywhere else that lyrics get used, including automotive, as you were mentioning. And then more recently, we've gotten into video production as well. Initially with lyric videos and automation of that process, and being able to generate lyric videos for labels and other partners using the lyric data that we have. But a few weeks ago, we acquired Rotor Videos, and that's allowing us to expand into a whole lot more production there with Spotify Canvas videos, Apple Motion art, social videos, other music video types. And part of that acquisition was building on a partnership with CD Baby to integrate those platforms into there. And we're really excited about the possibilities of what we can do and how we can grow the business beyond just lyrics, but also with the lyric video side of it too.
20 years is a very long time for any tech business, particularly a tech business in the music industry. Just for the extra context, when you started out, was it because you had a lot of enthusiasm for sort of dissemination of lyrics, or was it because you sort of spotted the licensing angle, that you wanted to clear up the void around licensing?
It was both. If you go back far enough, it was us being really into lyrics. We actually tried to start the company the first time in 2000 and started a regular lyric website at lyricfind.com, and realized quickly as we became popular over the span of 6 months that we needed licensing for this, and tried to get licensing in the fall of 2000, and then just discovered that it was an absolute what rating is this podcast? It was a nightmare to get.
You go crazy. Yeah.
it was an absolute clusterfuck of licensing, because it just wasn't anticipated. Right, the publishers didn't know what they could license and needed time to figure it out, because lyric licensing at that point had been a one-off for a book or used in a film or something like that, not somebody coming to them and saying, we want to license everything. We want your entire catalog. So we got into it because we loved lyrics and wanted to kind of answer those questions. And then through that initial foray, discovered that there was a huge gap in the industry of how to get this stuff licensed. And then when we came back to it in 2004, that was our focus, was filling that gap as an aggregator.
And then what we've seen subsequently is the adoption of lyrics everywhere. I mean, like I can remember back to the late 90s of dial-up internet, of, you know, wondering what the lyrics were to a song and Googling it and finding that someone had typed their own interpretation of it onto a website. And that was very revealing and interesting. And, you know, that was amazing.
Interpretation is a good word for it. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, and which is something which is still lingering, isn't it? Because we see lyrics everywhere. Now we see them in our DSPs. We see them, like you say, in lyric videos, which are a whole separate additional marketing strategy for artists. You know, we've seen the dissemination of them everywhere, and you're now also auto translating lyrics into other languages, which, as someone who is continually struggling to learn German, is a really good way to learn another language. You know, but looking ahead, what are the next places that you see lyrics being used in novel ways or perhaps unexpected ways?
Well, I think the obvious answer to that one is the automotive side that you mentioned earlier. This past year, lyrics rolled out in Mercedes cars, and that was the first OEM to launch them. And that's opened up a whole new area of possibility for us. And we've got another four or five or six brands that are launching this year as well. So the advent of connected cars has really started to enable much more of an entertainment experience and a integrated experience with the rest of your life than was possible before in cars.
So for those of us who haven't driven around in a Mercedes Benz with this experience sort of updated yet, what is it like? I mean, obviously modern cars have big touch screens everywhere. How are the lyrics delivered, and who is it for in the car? Because obviously the driver probably isn't going to be glancing around to check out, you know.
We don't want the driver staring at the screen when the music is going. But the experience is that regardless of where you're getting your audio, whether it's from the radio, from a connected streaming service, from a connected device that is then going into the audio stream. The audio is fingerprinted and the lyrics can appear to go with that song, to match it. Okay. So and that matching happens in a number of different ways depending on what data is available. But whatever you're listening to, the lyrics are available there. And that enables not necessarily the driver all the time, but other passengers in the car to be able to see the lyrics, can have that family sing along if you want to, you know, just belt it out. Or if you're, you know, sitting alone in the car and you don't want people to actually hear you yourself, then you can get the lyrics right. But really a lot of it is building towards things like autonomous driving as well, or with EVs, charge time entertainment, or when you're going and picking your kid up from school and you're sitting outside the school waiting for them to come out, or I'm taking my son to swimming lessons today and his swimming lessons are half an hour. I'm going to drop him off and I'm going to sit in the parking lot for half an hour. I'm not going to go home. It's too far for it to make sense. So many things now where we are in the car and in need of entertainment, and having a connected car opens up all of those possibilities. So we're looking at not just display of lyrics, but synchronized lyrics, the translations that you mentioned, having those in there. We have Lyric IQ data, which helps for content filtration and being able to have a family-friendly listening environment in the car. So with Lyric IQ, if suddenly a song comes on and nobody knows every song that's out now, we're releasing way too many songs for anyone to keep up. But knowing what the content of that song is, and maybe you've got a four-year-old in the back seat and you want to then skip that song because you didn't realize that's what Cardi B was talking about in there. So lyrics and lyric data can open up all sorts of different possibilities in an automotive environment, not just for singing along, but for curation and entertainment and language learning with the translations.
And so that's obviously a new frontier technologically, because cars are only fairly recently becoming sort of screen based in that sense, and there's perhaps it's a unique environment as well, because you're encapsulated in it. We're not talking smart fridge implementation here. It's a place where you do actually spend your time and you want to interact with something. There's not many more like physical places beyond the smart car to do that. So perhaps this is looking perhaps a little bit further ahead, but what are the uses of lyrics you think that might be on the horizon that we perhaps haven't thought about in terms of ways of using them for things we haven't considered?
I think that there's still a lot of opportunity in using lyrics for curation and for recommendations and for creating the right mood and the right environment for whatever task is being done. So many of us, we're going to the gym and working out, or we're cleaning the house, or we're driving, or we're whenever, having the right soundtrack to that and having the right topics covered and the right emotions that are in a song can make that experience so much better. And there's a lot of time and attention that is spent on what is the tempo, what's the BPM, what is the genre of the songs that are being played for that task, but not a lot of attention yet is paid to what is the actual content of the song. What is that song actually about? And so much of that can then be ingested both consciously and subconsciously, where you don't necessarily realize what a song is about all the time. One of the things that we realized with Lyric IQ data is the song "Mbop" by Hanson. It's actually a really sad, depressing song, because it's about
I have not considered this, but please.
Neither did I. I looked at the data and I was like, this can't be right. And then I looked up the lyrics. I was like, oh shit, it's actually accurate, because it talks about, growing up, losing your friends, losing your hair, and the mbop is gone, as the excitement is gone. And it's just completely changed my perception of that. And there's more famous examples too, or more well-known examples. You think about "Every Breath You Take" by The Police, where it's not a love song, it's a pocket song, right?
And it's about stalking.
Don't realize is that. Or when my sisters were really young, they used to run around the house singing "Liquid Dreams" by O-Town, which my parents had no idea what that was about because they weren't paying attention. And they were, 7 years old or something like that at the time.
That might have been for the best for all involved, not to understand.
There's all sorts of random examples like that where the actual content of the song matters so much in how it's being used, where it's being used. If you think about in-store music or music synchronization licenses for advertisements or in film and TV. There's a lot of that where it just doesn't get taken into account as much as it could. So,
and of course, one of the things that's happening at the moment is the sort of recontextualization of catalog. I'm going to broadly call them the kids these days, but you know, the newer consumers of music, they really don't seem to care whether it's a frontline release or if it's something from the catalog, as long as it is contextualized in a certain way. And you know, we've seen, of course, TikTok is the example we cited, but there's a bunch of them. And of course, the classic way of delivering this is with text on the screen, and sometimes that's lyrics as well, and that's part of it. Yeah. But which is great in terms of new generations of people discovering older music and not having any hang-ups around, hey, this is what my parents listen to, they don't care. But then I'm sort of interested then in terms of accuracy around lyrics, because you've got a new generation who are really hungry to understand what was being sung about in these older recordings. And maybe they're coming from a time where the lyrics haven't been officially recorded, or it's sort of vaguely recorded somewhere. And as you say, it's been interpreted by someone in 1999 who uploaded it, and then they've kind of hung around. So how do you deal with that issue of I don't really want to use the word accuracy, because some artists don't write their lyrics down. They don't want them shared, right? But then the consumer does. So how do you deal with that sort of tension?
I mean, the short version is we don't trust anybody else. We make sure that everything that has any level of popularity has been vetted by our team. And we have experts in different genres and languages and things else that literally they're down the hall from me in the office here, sitting with headphones on, transcribing and making sure that everything is accurate and make sure the synchronization is accurate, so that we can make sure that the quality and accuracy is there. And when I say that we don't trust anyone, that extends to getting lyrics in from labels or from other places like that, where that's not viewed as perfect on ours. Because a lot of the times the lyrics are written down going into the recording session, but then somebody gets into the studio and they ad-lib a line here or there, and now they're not accurate. So we make sure that we match the lyrics to the specific recording to have it be perfect. And we don't rely on that interpretation from 99 that was on a lyric website. We make our own interpretation with our expert teams and go through a pretty elaborate vetting process to make sure that it's going to be accurate.
Okay. Now, you obviously help pioneer that lyric space, that online lyric space, digital delivery of them in the burgeoning Web 2.0 world, which seems a long time ago now. We're entering a world of AI-powered information delivery, AI everything. And I wanted to talk to you about the situation. And of course, this is a very, very rapidly developing space. So things change very quickly. But I'm interested in with that 20 years of expertise of operating in digital lyric licensing, on what you think is happening or what might be happening with AI services delivering lyrics. And the reason I ask this is because there's obviously, you can talk about this in a minute, there's some high profile legal cases at the moment around, but very specifically around lyrics being ingested and music being ingested. Of course, there's controversy around the whole thing. But one thing I'm interested in was I very specifically did some research and I asked ChatGPT to deliver the lyrics to a song. And it did. It gave me the full lyrics with a caveat saying, and I've written this down, please note that these lyrics are provided for educational and informative purposes only. All rights to the lyrics and music are owned by their respective copyright holders. I will say as my caveat to that caveat, which is I on one day I asked for a specific song's lyrics, it delivered them in full. The next day I went back, it wouldn't do it. It said that it wasn't going to do it anymore because it's copyrighted. And then I went back again, asked for the same song lyrics, and it did it, and it delivered the whole lyrics again. So I don't know what the situation is, and that caveat came again. Now, I am not a lawyer, and it's very important to caveat this, but is writing that down, is delivering lyrics and writing that after it a good way to legally deal with this?
The short answer is no. <it's>, the longer answer is that phrase actually dates back to 99 in the early yes. days of lyric websites, where there was a theory that putting this on there and saying, oh, this is for educational purposes only, somehow absolved people of copyright infringement. Spoiler alert, it does not. It is not fair use to reprint an entire work. One of the tests of fair use is proportionality. So how much of the work are you using? Using 100% of it fails that test.
On the day when I asked again for exactly the same song lyrics and it delivered, it said, no, I can't give you them all, but it would give me maybe two lines of it and then add a description of the song and some sort of contextual information. And so then I went into this sort of feedback loop of trying to trick it into giving me more lyrics. And you could get it to give you maybe a bit of the verse, a bit of the chorus, and a bit of another verse, but you couldn't get it all together in one go.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's their...
But then the next time, as I said, the next time, it just gave me the whole thing again. So I don't know what the plan is there.
I'm guessing that the AI saw that on old lyric websites that it was indexing and interpreted that as a disclaimer that should come with the lyrics and you know, as a way to absolve themselves of responsibility. But yeah, it absolutely doesn't mean anything. And there was a company called Live Universe that was sued by the music publishers years ago. Tried that defense and lost.
Now, this is obviously a complicated area. AI is, there's a lot of regulation happening and very high profile conversations happening around what is, you know, how you can train AIs. And it's clear from me asking these questions to the AIs that it has already consumed probably all of the lyrics, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And so they're in there. And how that could potentially be licensed is a complicated question, which I'm now going to ask you, which is, I'm not asking you for a perfect answer, but I presume at the moment AI chat services are not paying license fees to deliver these lyrics. So how might licensing of lyrics work in AI-powered like delivery systems work in the future, perhaps?
Yeah, so it's definitely a complicated set of use cases and things, but it really breaks down into three areas, one of which is really easy, and that's just the straight regurgitation and display, right? We have models for that. That's something, it's not really any different than if you go to Google and you type in whatever song artist name lyrics and they show up there, that's licensed by us. There's a model for that. That's simple and straightforward where those licenses can be granted. Where it starts to fall apart is in the two other corners of the triangle. One is the training of models, and two is the generative parts of AI. So if you're saying to somebody, to an AI, write me a song in the style of the Beatles, right? Yeah. So to be able to do that, it has trained off of the lyrics of the Beatles to know what their style is and to know how they write and how they use vocabulary and how they use all different aspects and elements of a song. And I am not a songwriter myself, so I can't even speak intelligently about the different pieces that go in there, but obviously I have an appreciation for the work that they do. But there's the training aspect, so how do you value that, and how do you compensate for it? Do you compensate based on popularity? Do you compensate based off of quantity? Is every song created equally? If you're trying to learn as an AI how to write a song, does it matter how popular a song was in that writing process? Or do you just need to clear some baseline threshold of popularity to know that, okay, this was at least a decent song. So this is is good enough to train off of. Or
that is complicated, isn't it? Because one way of looking at it is if you stream a song on a streaming platform, if you stream a Beatles song, or if you stream a song by an artist that's had 100 plays, essentially the value of that song is the same in terms of royalty generation and time spent listening, if you like, and the value to the listener. So it is a complicated one, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you use a million different lyrics to train an AI model, how do you disseminate a licensing fee among those million lyrics? The training model is using each one equally. So do you divide it up equally, or do you give one song that's more popular a bigger piece of the pie? But that's something that could be figured out. And there could be an agreement in general among the industry of this is how it's going to be compensated. The harder part is when you get into the generative side and you're saying, okay, in the style of the Beatles. Now you're getting into name, image, and likeness rights, because you're using the Beatles as the reference there. You're not saying, write me a song like Hey Jude. Now you're going into name, image, and likeness rights. So instead of just having to get a license from Sony Music Publishing for the Beatles lyrics, now you also need a license from Universal for the Beatles name, image, and likeness. And a lot of those things are parts of those licenses are not things that can be licensed en masse. It's things that you need individual approvals for. It's not a scalable license in the way that music streaming is or a regular lyric license is, where I can go to Sony and say, license me everything in your catalog to be able to display the lyrics. Great, no problem. We've done that deal for 20 years. But I can't go to Universal and say, give me the NIL rights for every artist that you represent. They can't do that without going back and asking for permissions. And then there's moral rights issues of the interpretation and the generative sides. So it becomes really, really complicated. And part of the issue now is that rights holders, a lot of them aren't sure what they can and can't license. So it creates paralysis in the market. And it creates a scenario where they don't really have an option to license because they can't.
This is a hard question. And how do you see it potentially panning out? As someone who's sort of been through the hardships of legal cases and the big rights holders and big businesses that are using lyrics, putting pressure on to make what they want happen. How might this pan out? Because like you say, there's a lot of interests involved.
Yeah. And I think ultimately it will pan out one way or another, because AI and generative AI is not going away. It's not something that you can just say, oh, we're not going to allow this, so we're going to shut everything down. There's just too many AI systems out there. It's the cat is out of the bag. Ultimately, the first two prongs are something that can be done. It's being able to license the display, no problem. Figuring out a way to divide up a pool of money for training data among the relative rights holders, that's doable. That can all be done. It's just a matter of sitting in a room and figuring out the terms. But the generative side with name, image, and likeness rights, with moral rights, that one's really, really hard. And I don't know what a viable path forward is on that without some really, really, really broad industry cooperation. And the problem is it's not just the music industry. Obviously, every industry is dealing with this. So if you're a big AI platform and you need to have these types of licenses in every single industry that's out there, that's a very, very difficult task. So is it something where ultimately there has to be a legislated solution to say this is how these things will be handled? Or, you know, obviously a lot of the platforms claim that it is not something that requires a license, and you know, rights holders disagree. And I think they're,
I can imagine,
they're in a pretty good spot legally to disagree, but you know, maybe that ends up prevailing. But I don't think that there's a simple solution to the generative AI problem, so to speak.
But you do think that from your experience and situation and your dealings with licensed material like this, that there needs to be a framework that allows a revenue flow when we're just talking about lyrics here, and of course all art is encompassed by this, but for lyrics in particular, that there needs to be some sort of agreement to around not just delivery of it, but also interpretation and maybe even in the style of.
Yeah, and if I use AI to write me a song in the style of U2, and I release that song and it becomes a big hit, Universal Music Publishing, who owns all the U2 rights, should get a piece of that, because it's really, for all intents and purposes, a derivative work of their copyrighted material. How do you know, though, that was the inspiration for the creation?
And is this very specifically different? Because this is a question that comes up a lot, right? But we're talking just about lyrics here, of course. But if I sat down and said, right, I'm going to listen to a bunch of U2 songs, and I'm going to write my own lyrics that are kind of in the style of that, it's tempting to say, well, what's the difference? But the difference there is that I've done it from my human brain, isn't it?
Yeah.
And this, I'm not a machine that has been specifically trained on a body of work to then generate them, right?
Yeah, exactly. And from a legal perspective, I don't know exactly the words to express what the difference is, but that's absolutely the line is, now all of a sudden you're taking those existing creative works and ingesting them into a program, into a tool to write this. You're not just listening to it and being creative yourself and interpreting it. It's a direct use of the copyrighted material for a commercial purpose.
Right.
And where does that responsibility lie? An AI platform might say, it's not on us, it's on the user. Similar to a search engine saying, like, you know, we're just passing this information along, or things like with DMCA related materials in the US it's stuff where they might claim that the responsibility lies on the user. And if the user says, give me this in the style of U2, it's their responsibility to report that to Universal and say, I'm releasing this now, I need to get a license. But obviously that doesn't scale either.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. I mean, this is something which, we could talk again in a year and everything could be completely different.
Yep.
It's a good snapshot of where we are now. Thanks, Darrell. Look, I'll put some links to the various lyric find things that you've mentioned and news around the things you've been doing beneath the podcast for people to check out. One final question then, let's move back to human created works, just for a bit of personal context for you. If you could only pick one song to listen to for the rest of your life, I will also swing an album in there if you want to go for that. What would it be?
So this is the thing is, we used to use this as an interview question.
Okay.
Well, it's like, if you had to pick one song to listen to for the rest of your life, what would it be? And the idea being like, we were trying to test how people thought about it. And would they pick whatever was their current favorite song, or would they pick something that they've loved for a long time that you're not going to get sick of? We've all had songs that we love when they first come out, and then we can't stand them a year later because they just get overplayed. So for me, if I always think of it as like a desert island song of your stuff, I'm assuming it's a tropical desert island in this case.
Yes, you can have a coconut tree.
Yeah, then My song is Boys of Summer by Don Henley, but my album would be Legend from Bob Marley and Wailers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a good mix. Yeah, you've picked the right vibes there, haven't you? There?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. The vibe-based approach.
If I need one song, I've just got to like, if I'm stuck on an island, I'm gonna need to get myself going and make sure I survive. Then.
No, I respect that. It's very strategic approach.
Yeah.
I could be stuck on a desert island with a Bob Marley album.
Yeah, that's the one. Like I owned like 4 copies of that CD back in the CD days, and I would just wear it out and have to go get another one.
Yeah, yeah. I understand. I've got multiple copies of Exodus squirreled away somewhere just because it's a great album.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Okay, look, Daryl, thanks ever so much for joining us.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay, that's it. Thanks again to Daryl for joining us. And have a look at the links that I have shared beneath the podcast to some of the things he mentioned. If you found that conversation useful, please share the podcast on with someone else who you think will get something out of it. And if you want to get in touch with me, I, of course, would love to hear from you. You can email me on Joe, that's Joe, at musically.com. We also have a free weekly email, another way to stay in touch, albeit just in one direction, called The Knowledge, which rounds up bits and pieces of the best analysis, news, marketing insight, and skills from across Music Ally's very broad range of services. So sign up and impress your friends. Links to all of that stuff are also in the description as ever. And that's it from me. Thanks for listening. I've been Joe Sparrow. You've been you. And until next time, farewell.